WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Bill Forsyth's first feature film was also Scotland's first feature film. It was the 1979 movie That Sinking Feeling. It cost $10,000, and it starred unemployed teenagers from a Glasgow youth center. Forsyth continues to live in Scotland, and although his movies have become more ambitious, they've remained offbeat. His movies, which have played in the U.S., include Gregory's Girl, Local Hero, Comfort and Joy, and Housekeeping. Forsyth has just completed his first film for a Hollywood studio. It's called Breaking In, and it stars Burt Reynolds as an aging burglar who breaks into safes for a living. He takes on a flaky young apprentice who breaks into houses for kicks. The screenplay is by John Sayles. Breaking In is the first film Forsyth directed that he didn't write.
Although writing and directing is still, you know, the prime thing that I want to do, I've become a little less precious about, you know, working with other people's material.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter what you do, someone like me, taking on someone else's script, I would never just kind of leave it the way it was and turn up on the day and shoot it. So I think over the months between taking on the project and filming it, I had, you know, managed to put my own stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that John Sayles was quite sensitive about, because being a writer director himself, one of the first things he said to me was that if you do this, I'll leave you alone, you know, I won't kind of burden you with my interpretation of it, you know, I'll just hand it over and let you go on with it. And that's what he did.
Mm-hmm. Burt Reynolds gives a terrific performance in the movie as a burglar in his early 60s. Now, he's usually thought of as a macho hero of formula action films. Why did you want to use him? What did you see in him?
It's difficult to kind of verbalize, to my mind, these are the kind of things that I mentioned his name very early on in the casting procedure, and I had quite a hard job even then explaining why I was interested in him, but I just was, and I suppose it's only in retrospect that I can begin to piece together why I was interested in him. First of all, there's quite a limited choice of actors of that age group. There are quite a lot on the basis that the financiers wanted someone who had a reputation and a name. You know, there's not a kind of unlimited amount of actors of his generation available who have, you know, good reputations and kind of box office reputations. So that was the first thing that kind of limited the choice immediately. But he was certainly my first choice among the actors who qualified and who were of the right age. And as I say, I'm just beginning to piece together why now. I think the fact that he is a very kind of physical performer and has a persona as a physical actor, benefited this particular character in the sense that it's someone who is beginning to realise the limitations of his lifespan, and he's beginning to lose his capacity to, you know, be physical, and he's a criminal who's kind of at the end of his career. He can't run up and down buildings the way he used to 10 years before, and he's almost like a kind of adolescent old man. He's someone who is just beginning to realise he's beginning to realise that there's more behind him than there is in front of him.
Did you have to work hard to convince him to do the movie?
Yes, in some ways, yes. He was obviously resistant to the idea of playing someone older than himself, but I suppose that's just a normal actor's vanity. But once we had overcome that, he kind of put himself into it full tilt, to the extent of spending, you know, like 2 hours every morning in the makeup truck, going through the aging process. And that was quite, we were shooting in Portland in last summer, which we, sometimes on the street we had temperatures of 110, and Burt was wearing virtually a full latex makeup mask, and it was very painful to watch him. You know, when the sweat built up underneath the latex, having to cope with it. And at the end of the day, when we shot the last scene, he would tear off this plastic face with great joy.
I was wondering if you wish that you were able to get someone who you liked as much as Reynolds, who was a little bit older and wouldn't have had to wear appliances and latex makeup, if you feared it might become a bit of a stunt, getting someone who was younger and had to make up to look older.
It didn't really worry me, because I always perceived of Burt being much nearer the character in question than he did.
which I bet you didn't tell him.
No, I think we're all allowed our vanities, you know, so But certainly it made him more comfortable, you know, going through the aging process, and it made him more comfortable in the part. But as I say, I think we had the benefits of the fact that it was someone who was resisting old age, if you like, because that was very much the character. As I was saying earlier, it was someone who was just beginning to feel the first twinges of mortality, and so it was actually quite beneficial to the character to have that kind of in the background anyway.
Bill Forsyth is my guest, the director of Local Hero, Housekeeping, Comfort and Joy, and a new movie called Breaking In, which stars Burt Reynolds. Now, I have to tell you, I saw a morning screening of Breaking In. The night before, someone tried to break into the trunk of my car. And so I was there with a car with where the trunk was kind of useless. And I come to your movie, and in the first scene, there's Burt Reynolds trying to break the lock of someone's house to get in. And I had a really interesting reaction to it. It's the first time I've seen a movie right after an attempt at crime was was made against me. And I found myself really identifying with two criminals in this, you know, with their frustration, with their sense of an alternate life, you know. With, I think we all identify with feelings of marginality, no matter how marginalized we are in real life. But at the same time, I felt like the victim. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it was a preoccupation of mine making the movie that I didn't want to sentimentalize the criminals to the extent that that people liked them and forgot what they were actually doing, because I had this problem as well. I had to remind myself all the time that you know, I was making a movie about criminals, and I've suffered at the hands of criminals as well. I've had cars and houses broken into, and there was quite a lot of my kind of Calvinistic upbringing came out in the fact that I was determined that they were going to pay for their crimes at the end. And we had quite a lot of kind of active debate between myself and the financiers about how many years in jail the sentence should be at the end. And I started off in the high teens. I wanted them to get 15 or 16 years, and they wanted them to get 2 years because they wanted a kind of happy ending. So we ended up compromising. I think at the moment in the movie he gets 9 years or 8 years or something. But I was quite determined, you know, that not to fall into the trap of having the criminals, you know, fall into the category of being lovable or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to. Well, I think it's more or less what Burt Reynolds' character teaches the kid, is that crime is, you know, is an occupation which has its penalties, and the penalties of extreme discipline and loneliness. And I was trying to create the idea that the Reynolds character was, in a way, was punishing himself for the life that he'd chosen, for the life of crime. He was punishing himself in the way that he lived a very restricted life and had virtually no social life, and didn't even enjoy spending the money that he made from crime. He would put himself on a budget, you know, using the excuse that he didn't want to splash out money and bring attention to himself. But these were ways that maybe psychologically he was punishing himself even without going to jail.
Your films are usually more about quirky characters than they are about elaborate plots. And I wonder why you go after that in movies.
It's just exactly what you say. I'm not interested in telling stories. I'm more interested in examining people in certain situations. And I don't like stories taking over from situation, if I can make that distinction. Because if an audience is led into following a story, then they really don't have time to. They're spending most of their attention following the story, and I'm much more interested in people being able to spend time, you know, working out what the characters are doing and how the characters are reacting to each other and to the situations they're in, and just commenting on things rather than chasing a story from A to B. I think we use stories too much in our lives. You know, from the time that we're kids, we're virtually taught that life is a story with a beginning and a middle and hopefully a happy ending. And I'm just virtually doing everything I can to subvert that view of life, and certainly that view of movies.
Would you say that there are certain kinds of characters that interest you most?
Well, to pick up your term, yeah, I think marginal characters interest me. But I think you said the same thing. We're all marginal to a greater or lesser degree. And obviously in movies you tend to, you know, you tend to highlight things more than in real life. And so if you're wanting to deal with marginality, you'll deal with criminals or people who live an actively marginal life. But I think virtually we all lead that life anyway. We're all, you know, removed from, you know, the real world in certain ways. So I'm just trying to get at some kind of sense of realness all the time.
In some ways, it seems that you are the Scottish film industry. Your first feature film, That Sinking Feeling, was also the first feature film that came out, the first fiction feature film that came out of Scotland that was made by a Scottish film director. You must have learned a lot of things the hard way, working in a country in which there virtually was no film industry.
I suppose so. I can't really recollect the pain of it, though. But I suppose we might have learned things the hard way, and maybe we learned things the wrong way, because this is one of the frustrations of being a filmmaker is that you never really have the opportunity to observe anyone else working. You know, film directors aren't the kind of people who like other film directors hanging around when they're rehearsing or shooting. So it's a very lonely occupation. And when you go to see a movie in the cinema, you're seeing the outcome of the work rather than the work itself. So I continually find myself wondering what other people do when they make films and whether I'm doing it entirely the wrong way.
Well, is there anything that you've come to figure out actually is the wrong way, even though it really works for you?
There's one problem about making movies, and that is it's just occurred to me quite recently. The whole business of acting, when you're making a movie, you're trying to present the idea that things are happening to these people and they're reacting to them, you know, hopefully without telling too much of a story. But what you do before that is the actors read the script, and so they know what's going to happen to them before it happens to them. So most of the rehearsal process is really a way of disguising the fact that they know what's going to happen to them.
Well, you worked with non-actors on your first film. I mean, they were involved in the Glasgow Youth Theatre, but they were there because they were unemployed teenagers, not necessarily because they were seeking out an acting profession. Did you learn a lot from working with untrained actors, also young untrained actors?
Yes, the interesting thing was, you were right. I used them A, because they were cheap, and B, because they didn't know any better than I how to go about making a movie, and so I wouldn't feel like a fool. I felt that I had so little experience that if I'd worked with real actors, they would have seen how little I knew. So, but the strange thing was that working with the kids, and then subsequently working with professional actors, there's no difference in the way that they behaved. The kids required the same things from me as actors like Burt Reynolds and Burt Lancaster, you know, have. It's quite a strange thing to realise that. But just a sense of realness. I think an actor just wants to feel some security in the sense that the director feels something is happening and something real is happening, and that's all they really want of you, is that sense of security.
Have your movies in any way changed the fledgling Scottish film industry? Are there more Scottish filmmakers now, and is the government trying to help support the film industry?
Not really. No, we have a tough time with the government that we have at the moment in terms of all the arts. Everything's, you know, well, all the social programs are being cut back as well. So there's very little money for any kind of luxuries like filmmaking. Not because of what I've done, but just because of the kind of generation that I belong to. The film business in Scotland has grown up. Scotland used to be a place that people had to leave. I think I belong to the first generation of Scots people who didn't actually leave the country, because up until then you had to go either to London or abroad to make a go of anything. But my generation, most of the people that I know, have made a go of staying there, and so that's really why the industry has grown up. It's incidental that I'm part of it. So there are just 10 times more people living and working in Scotland in the film business than there were, you know, when I started out. But it doesn't really have a lot to do with me.
My guest is film director and screenwriter Bill Forsyth, and his movies include Local Hero, Housekeeping, Comfort and Joy, and the new film Breaking In, which stars Burt Reynolds. I want to ask you a few things about your film Local Hero. And this was about a representative from a U.S. oil company who goes to a village in Scotland and tries to buy out the place in order to set up a refinery there. So in a way, the movie was about seeing this village in Scotland through the eyes of an American, and the Scottish people seeing the American and reacting to his behavior. Were there things that you were consciously trying to show about Scotland in that movie?
I think so. It wasn't perceived as such in Scotland anyway, or in Britain. Maybe more so in the States. But I was trying to subvert the kind of screen image of Scotland that did exist. By trying to demystify the kind of Brigadoon type image of Scotland. But the problem is, and the problem was, that to do that you have to use the same material that existed in these kind of movies. And so it's difficult to subvert something when you actually have to, you know, physically and visually use the same material. And so I think the subversion that was going on was too subtle for a lot of people, but I certainly was trying to undermine the cinematic image that Scotland had at the time.
Mm-hmm. Your movie Comfort and Joy was about a middle-of-the-road morning man on the radio who, he's very lighthearted on the air, little middle-of-the-road jokes and everything, and he decides he wants to do something serious and gets involved in trying to make a documentary on these mafia wars in the ice cream business. And of course, all these criminals want his autograph, and they want him to dedicate Dean Martin records to their family on the air. Did you ever go through a crisis yourself about feeling like you wanted to do something more serious or be perceived as more serious as you were being perceived?
Yes, I think that movie, aspect of the movie was directly related to the fact that I was beginning to feel a bit misunderstood, because I'd made three movies which had been greeted as comedies and had been labelled, you know, charming and lyrical and wacky and various words like that, when I was trying to be much more serious in the things I was trying to say. So I think there was a little bit of frustration coming out there, yeah. But it's an age-old problem. I mean, in some aspects, that movie was similar to Preston Sturges's Sullivan's Travels, where a movie director was going through having the same problem of being misunderstood. But in both movies, the same thing happened. The guy realised that he was good at one thing and he better go on with what he was good at.
Was that the resolution you made about yourself?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm still trying. I think the movies I make now are kind of less ingratiating. I think the earlier movies I was trying to maybe please too much, and that's why the humour got in the way. I've always tried to be, you know, I'm a very kind of serious person, and I've always tried to, you know, say serious things in my movies, but I was too cute in the way that I was saying these serious things. So I think the serious side of me is more apparent now.
Did you write all the jingles yourself for Comfort and Joy?
I wrote the words. I didn't write the music. I had a friend who actually ran the local radio station write the jingles, yeah, but I wrote the words.
The words, it was like thrifty pops.
Thrifty pops, yeah, you just munch them all day, they never stop.
Did you grow up seeing a lot of movies?
Not really, no, I didn't. I wasn't much of a moviegoer. When I was very young, I went through a period when I was perhaps between, you know, about 19, 23, 24, about 3 or 4 years when I began to watch movies more seriously and caught up with a lot of things. But strangely enough, after that, it kind of tailed off again, and I'm not much of a moviegoer now either.
So you're really more interested in making than in watching movies?
Yeah. I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of watching movies.
I wonder why that is. Why you enjoy making them so much and not get the same, I don't mean the same, but not get satisfaction watching them.
Yeah, I don't know. Most times I feel kind of manipulated when I'm watching a movie. I just think that I'm being kind of, you know, I'm being kind of beaten around the head with ideas rather than being, ideas being, you know, laid before me for my, you know, for me to pick and choose. I think that's the frustration, really.
So have the frustrations you felt as a film goer affected how you write and direct your movies?
Yes, they have. I feel continually subversive. I mean, I think that I really am a kind of underground. Maybe that's too grand a term, but I think I certainly feel subversive in everything I do, and virtually at every stage in the filmmaking process. I kind of ask myself the question, you know, how can I subvert, this situation or this scene, you know, and how can I make it less like a real movie, and that's. That's a continual preoccupation with me, yes.
I don't think this is a very fertile time for subversiveness in the American cinema. Did you have any troubles, any problems doing what you wanted to do on your new film, Breaking In?
Yes, I would say that. And not troubles that were taken care of. I mean, I'm fairly happy with the result, but you must understand also it was the first movie that I made virtually within the American studio system, or maybe just on the periphery of it. And so I was exposed to lots of things that I'd never been exposed to, the marketing aspects of a movie, the previewing, and the need for cast, for name casting, and these were kind of very energy sapping things. But there are things that most American movie makers have to go through on a daily basis.
Would you do it again? Would you make another movie in America and subject yourself to the kind of committee decision making?
Yes, I would. Yes, because I survived it, and the movie to a large extent has survived it. And it's not. I don't feel precious about making movies. If you're asking someone to spend, upwards of $7 million, on your movie, then you obviously have to take, you have to take into consideration that the amount of money that's being laid out. But there are ways of coping with it. I mean, I'm just at the very beginning of perhaps that aspect of my career as a filmmaker, the aspect of being able to cope with these things and turn them to your advantage.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us about movies. Thank you.
Thank you.